This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Arrowhead Land Company. Here you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. I'm your host, John Hudspeth. And welcome to summer. My goodness, it is finally hot outside. I think, I can't remember if it was Saturday or Sunday. I guess it was probably Saturday. I was out at the ranch, you know, outside in the afternoon. And for the first time this year, I was finally just like, okay, yes, it is hot. Like, summer is officially here. Looking at the extended forecast, like from this weekend on, it's basically 100 degrees plus pretty much every day, you know, 100, 101, something like that. And so, yes, we have officially made it to summertime. So, yes, just everything that goes along with that, it's just awful. It's just awful. When I was younger, summer was actually my favorite time of the year. Like, the heat just didn't bother me that bad. I was out working in it all the time anyway, and you have to go to the lake and stuff. So, I didn't mind the heat, didn't mind summer. And but nowadays, as I've gotten older, as I've gotten more out of shape, put on a little extra insulation, man, give me fall or winter all day long. I will take being a little bit cold over being hot any day. So yeah, I don't know. Anyway, that's it. Summer's here, like I said. We got a good one for you today. Got a ton of stuff to cover in this intro before we get going, though. Yeah, just all kinds of random topics. So like I said, I made it out to the ranch this weekend. My wife is running our church's little sports camp this week, and so I took my daughter out to the ranch just to get out of her hair. I let her have the house to herself. You know, she was busy organizing, planning, and just sleeping, getting ready for this week. And so, like I said, took little Hal Powell up to the ranch, and the main thing I wanted to do, which I did accomplish, was to fix the one camera that I've been complaining about for a few weeks that was been all, you know, fogged up and stuff. And I came up with this idea on my own, and it ended up working. I took the camera down, took the batteries out, took the SD card out and everything, took it back to the house, and I borrowed my mom's hair dryer, and I set the camera up on the counter, and again, had everything stripped out of it, and just turned that hair dryer on, and I didn't put it too close. I knew the heat would be bad for it, so backed it up a little bit, and just pointed that hair dryer right at the camera, and left it for about an hour, timed out to where my daughter needed to take a nap anyway. So just chilled in the house, let that hair dryer go, and after about an hour, I looked at it, and the lens was just clear as could be. And so felt around the camera. I could still feel like a little moisture on the inside, so I laid it down and had that warm air shooting like basically up into like the camera port, you know, kind of more to the internal stuff, and left it there for another 20, 30 minutes, something like that. And put it all back together, and it works good as new. So the daytime pictures, you can still see a little bit of a haze, not too bad. But nighttime, you like don't even know it's there. So that worked out really well. And then, of course, like right after I left, I was checking all my my photos from that night and realized that actually one of my other cameras was also just as bad. It's just in a spot, like it's not on a feed or anything. So this isn't a spot where I don't get as many pictures. Sorry, and so I just hadn't noticed it. So I do have one more camera that I need to do that to, but at least I know a good way to, you know, unfog them. And then I also bought some stuff on Amazon, just like some lens cleaner, defogger type stuff, and I sprayed that on there. So hopefully don't have that problem anymore. And just for you guys out there, if you have that problem, if you have some moisture in your camera, get your borrow a hair dryer, or maybe you have one for yourself. I don't know. Set it up again. Don't put it too close because you don't want to get that, you know, real hot air on there. Set it back a little bit, but just get that, you know, that kind of warm air, consistent airflow on there. Dry it right out. So that was good. Checked on the old food plots, and honestly, it was about what I expected. Some decent growth, but a lot of grass as well. And I was looking at my alfalfa plot. And I think I figured out why people say that you can't just go out there and do it in a day, which is what I tried to do. I don't know. It may pull through. I didn't have a chemical or any way to spray it with me, so I wasn't able to do that. But the Bermuda grass is coming in strong, and I just don't know if the alfalfa is going to take. So what? Again, I was kind of expecting that. I just wanted to try it. I don't know if I'll try it again, if I can save it or what. I think, you know, give it a couple months all summer long, especially if it's getting hot and dry, like it looks like it's about to get. I don't know if the alfalfa is going to take, so not a huge deal. Like I said, I was kind of half expecting it. That's why I didn't put too much crazy time and effort into it. If I would have done it right, I think I would have got a stand, but that just wasn't the cards I was dealt this year. So if it doesn't work out, not a problem. What is it? There's some, Don Higgins always says, you know, that's the nice thing about a spring plot. If you screw up, you get a second chance. So if it doesn't work out, I'll just plant it with something else in the fall, be good to go. Other plots were looking pretty decent. Like I said, they do have some decent grass and stuff coming up. But overall, got a pretty good stand and got it established. And again, according to my cameras, like the deer are definitely using them. So that's good. The mineral sites that I put out, those things are getting hammered. Even the ones that I have fenced that, you know, the hogs can't get to and anything, those trophy rocks had already been like cut in half by straight deer. I actually got a picture. I don't think I posted it. I thought about posting it, but I got a picture of a doe literally laying down at the trophy rock and just like sitting there licking on it for like an hour straight. I did see a couple fawns this weekend. Sorry, speaking of does, not on our property, but I saw one like along the road, and then I saw one on a different property I was on. So it is that time of year. Very, very random tangent. So be watching out for does if you're, you know, driving around or mowing or anything like that. But yes, the mineral sites looking good. Food plots looking pretty good. Cameras are rolling, and like I keep saying, it's going to be here before we know it, guys. So yeah, that was all good this weekend. And then another thing that I got to do just at the house, you know, a lot of my hunting stuff is there. And I dug out all my firepower for this upcoming fall. Because as I mentioned last week, I have a lot of hunts this fall with a lot of different weapons. So starting off, I'll have the muzzleloader hunt in Kansas. And so typically, like, you know, around my place, usually hunting feeders, maybe a pinch point or so. And I'm usually shooting like 100, maybe 200 yards. But out there in Kansas, it's going to be much more wide open. I have, you know, a pretty nice CVA muzzleloader that's supposed to be good out to 300. And so I think my plan is to sight that in at 200. And it says all this in the booklet, but I believe it, if you sight in at 200, I believe you're an inch high at 100 and 3 inches low at 300. So pretty dang good for a muzzleloader. Obviously, I'm going to practice and, you know, shoot those distances and double check it. I'm not just going to go off what the book says. But yeah, so I got the muzzleloader dug out and got all my stuff. I'm going to order a powder scale. I've been just doing like a you know, measuring it with a hand deal. But if I am going to try to shoot, you know, longer distances and very accurately, I'm going to order an actual powder scale so I can measure it out, you know, correctly and do it that way. Also dug out the good old 300 Win Mag because my last hunt of the year is my South Texas mule deer hunt. And, you know, it says on their website, be prepared to shoot out to, you know, 300 plus yards. Again, like I've shot that distance, but I've never really legitimately, I take that back. When I was in Idaho, I was prepared to shoot that far, but I haven't like practiced that in a long time. And not only just practice shooting, you know, 300 or 400 yards, but practice shooting in a hunting situation, you know, not like laying down perfectly prone or at a bench or anything like that, but like a hunting situation where you may be on a knee or resting on a backpack or a tree or something like that. And so that's one of my goals this summer, even though it's stupid hot, is to practice not just long distance shooting, but long distance shooting in a hunting situation. So dug that rifle out, getting it all cleaned up. I'm also going to practice with like a 6.5 Creedmoor and a 22 even, just for repetition and, you know, not breaking the bank. You know, you can get a lot of really good shooting practice in with a 22, even if you're not shooting, you know, 200-300 yards, but just going through your motions, you know, your breathing, your trigger pull, all that good stuff. And then, you know, the 6.5 Creedmoor, it'll reach out there and touch them, and just cheaper to shoot than the 300 Win Mag. And then obviously be shooting the 300 Win Mag quite a bit. So, so yeah, I got the two rifles, or the rifle and the muzzleloader dug out. And then of course, like I mentioned, I also drew the McAllister hunt. So actually right here next to me, I have my old recurve that I've not shot in a couple years. I've been shooting the lighter longbow, but I got the recurve and I've had it strung up for about a week now. And I'm basically trying to wear it down some because I can't remember it, and it's not listed on the bow. It's either a 60 or a 65 pound recurve, which is just, you just don't need that. And it is a bull to pull back and shoot. That's why I've been shooting the lighter longbow the last couple years, you know, working on my form and everything. But I wanted something a little heavier for this hunt. So like I said, I got it strung up here, basically trying to wear it down a little bit. We'll see if that works. I don't know. I saw a tip on the hunt's Facebook page about a cheap bow you can buy on Amazon for like $100. And there was a bunch of guys on there talking about how like that's all you need and it's good to go. I would love to have a nicer bow. Y'all know me. I like my nice stuff. I like to spend money on my guns and my bows and everything like that, even though I don't buy them very often. But when I do buy one, like, I want to buy the best. But I just don't know if it's worth spending, you know, $1,000 on like a custom longbow or recurve for this hunt that, you know, is a 2.5 day hunt. And I just, you know, I have some stuff here that will work. So it's just hard to justify me spending that much money. So I don't know. We'll see. I've been wanting a new traditional bow. Y'all know that. But I just don't know if that's in the budget for this year. So we'll just have to wait and see on that. But I mean, $100, get a good bow, you know, 50 pound bow, something like that. Somewhere in between these two might be worth a shot. Way cheaper than $1,000. So yeah, man, I feel like I missed something. Get the camera taken care of, got all the weapons, food plots, I still have not got to, I think I told you guys, I put out a new feeder for this upcoming year. I haven't had a chance to fence it or get the stand up or anything. I have a stand. It's an old stand. It's in a huge old pecan tree. And I've never really ended up hunting it. I set it for the 2% buck, but it ended up being in an area where I don't think deer ever really used. I had a camera up there. There was no feeder or anything. It was just kind of on a transition zone in a real thick area. But I had a camera up for like an entire year and got maybe 2 deer pictures, no buck pictures. It was super, super close where I saw the 2% buck, but he just never seemed to use this exact area. So all that to say, that's the stand I'm going to move to this new spot. So I just got to find some time to get up there, get it taken down, and move it over. And then I definitely want to fence this feeder, honestly, not just for the hogs, but it's going to be like a lot of my other setups right in the middle of a cattle pasture. So I need to be able to keep the cows out of it too. So definitely going to have to fence it. And yeah, that's about it. I mentioned a few weeks ago about making a master list that I do every year, and I make a note on my phone and I list out every single one of my hunting spots and what I need to do at each of those spots, whether it's replacing the straps on a tree or changing a feeder motor or, you know, maybe cutting the top wire off a fence or lowering it down, something like that, you know, giving them a spot to jump. I still need to make that list, but this year, hopefully that list is going to be much shorter than the last couple of years because I've got things, I wouldn't say dialed, but you know, I've just been hunting this place long enough now that I've really learned a lot about the deer movement, how they use everything, and I feel like most of my setups are in pretty good spots, and you know, especially if I can add at least one new setup this year, should be pretty good. So yeah, that is probably going to do it for this intro. That was a nice long intro. We have what I hope is going to be a fun episode this week. This is one that I've been thinking about for a while, and I thought about doing some filming with this actually, but I just didn't know if there'd be enough going on to make an interesting film. But so I have this little farm pond that I've basically chosen to be my new fishing hole. A lot of our ponds have dried up over the years, or the dam broke, and we just don't really have a good spot for me to fish. Or, you know, I have some nieces and nephews that are getting old enough that they like to fish now, and so I basically picked this one pond. And I've made it my project pond. And my goal is to get, like, basically make this the best little, you know, fishing pond you can do in an acre and a half pond. It already had fish in it. And I don't want to, you know, talk about it too much right now because that's what the episode's going to be about. But I'm basically going to take you guys through the steps of, you know, what this pond was, what my goals are for, and what I'm doing to accomplish those goals. Because there's a lot of people, I know there's a lot of people out there like me, who grew up fishing little farm ponds. You have access to it, you know, whether it's half an acre, 2 acres, whatever. You know, if you're lucky, maybe you have a bigger, you know, 3-plus acre lake, but most of us have access one way or another to some little, you know, 1 acre pond, and that's where we have to fish. And so yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about this week, a little bit of pond management. I hope you guys are ready for it, and we're going to dive into that right now. All right, folks, let's talk about one of my absolute favorite things in the world, and that is cattle ponds. Like I mentioned before, I grew up fishing cattle ponds. I grew up duck hunting cattle ponds. That's just kind of what I had access to as a kid. And like I mentioned, like almost anybody out there can gain access to some kind of pond. Like I said, might be small, but you can probably get access to some kind of pond. And so this pond that I'm talking about, that I'm going to be kind of using as my example, it is a pond that actually was on my grandparents' old place, and it's about, when it's full, it's probably 1.5 acres max. You know, in the summer, it might get down to 1 acre, but that brings me to my first point is, if you're going to, you know, put some time and effort into this thing, you need to make sure that the pond is either big enough or catches enough water that it's not going to go dry in the summer, because if it dries completely up, you're going to obviously have a really, really hard time growing fish in that sucker. And so it needs to be either big enough, deep enough, or catch enough runoff, spring fed, something like that, to where even when it gets really hot outside or really dry, it's not going to go completely dry and dry up. So that's the biggest thing. So this pond matches that. It catches a decent amount of water, and it just holds water really, really well. Now, like I mentioned before, this it's not some kind of specialized, hand-dug and manicured, like made-for-fishing pond. This pond, it's been around my entire life. Like, I don't remember before it was there. And it has had cows and horses and everything else watering out of it for, I mean, at least the last 30 years, something like that, probably longer than that. So it had, like, zero vegetation in it. It was never stocked. I should point that out, too. It was never stocked. It just has fish in it. Like, a lot of these ponds just have fish in it. I've always heard the theory that it's birds, you know, like cranes and stuff will go around and they'll go to a lake or another pond that has fish and they walk in the mud and the eggs get stuck to their feet and they transfer those to, ponds and streams and stuff. I don't know how this thing got stocked, but it has fish in it. So if I had my preference, I would actually prefer a pond that did not have fish in it. If I'm being honest, you know, if you have a pond that maybe it's a new pond or you got it and it maybe it dried up a long time ago because the dam was busted or something like that and you were able to fix the dam, that's actually the best scenario where you can start from fresh. You know what you're putting in there. You can put the right amounts in there and everything like that. And you can actually manage it. Part of the thing, or you know, a big part of, it sounds dumb, managing this pond is just managing the fish population. And I'll get into that here in a minute. But like I said, you need a pond, the bigger the better, obviously. It needs to be able to hold water. And then you just need to figure out what is inside. So again, this pond that I'm talking about, roughly acre and a half, probably a little less than that. No grass, no structure, no contour, anything like that. Just a big old bowl, which is how most cattle ponds are. So the biggest thing that happened to this pond, though, is we were able to get the cows out. The land use changed a little bit, and now they just cut it for hay. They no longer graze cows in there or anything like that. And so that has been huge because you no longer have cows, you know, churning it up, making it a mud hole, ruining spawning habitat, kicking up beds or anything like that. And so this pond this year, for the first time in decades, was able to just kind of rest, honestly. And just in the last couple months, it actually has some grass growing in it. I'm assuming they're reeds. They're still young, so I'm not quite sure what they are. Just recently, just in the last few weeks, I have noticed some, I think it's hydrilla. I don't know my aqua or my water plants very well, but that's my guess. And so I probably need to do something about that. It's small. Like, I could probably just get in there by hand and clean it out. I've thought about getting a couple grass carp. I mean, probably like two for a pond this size would be enough to help manage, you know, the vegetation. But that grass in there is like a game changer for me, for multiple reasons. One, for the fish, just, you know, some structure, offers them some protection. But then also this winter for the ducks, you know, it's not just going to be a barren Bermuda grass pasture to this big puddle of water. It's actually going to have, you know, some structure, some place for ducks to hide, offer some protection from the road that's not too awful far away. So yeah, that's been a big thing. It's just getting the cows out in it, protecting it. If you are not in that situation, let's say, you know, that is the cow's water source. Like, you have no other choice but to let cows water out of that thing. If it's your land, obviously, or maybe you can talk to the landowner if it's, you know, you're just asking permission or something, you don't have to give the cows access to the entire thing. In fact, a couple years ago, we had the Noble Foundation out to our ranch. And one of the things that we were talking to them about was our ponds, you know, our water. And just, they were talking about how important it is for cows to have good, clean drinking water. And then also just to protect your ponds. And actually, one of their recommendations was to fence off about 90% of your pond and then basically fence in an alleyway to where cows can go in there, they can get a drink, and they can get out. You don't want the cows, you know, just staying in there, using it as shade essentially in the summer to cool off, because again, they're just going to be trampling up the bottom, they're going to be muddying up the water, they're going to be messing up the spawning habitat. And so if there are cows on the property, again, you know, go out, you know, 15 yards or whatever from the bank, make a big square, and then just give the cows an alley to where they can still go in there. They have it as a water source and everything, but most of that pond, and especially a lot of that edge habitat, is protected. So that's a big thing, getting the cows out of the water. Next thing, obviously, is, well, I was going to say fish, but really before the fish comes the structure. And there is all different avenues you can go with this. The first thing that I started to do, like I had actually gone and I had cut tree limbs because I figured that was the cheapest, easiest way to get structure in this thing. But then I started thinking about it and I was like, okay, I want this to be a fishing pond. If I go and I throw a bunch of just random limbs in there that I can't see, I'm going to be getting hung up all the time. And that is not, like, I don't want to be losing lures and stuff. Those things are expensive nowadays. And so even though I'd actually cut all these limbs, I ended up not using those. I backtrack on that, threw the limbs away. There is all kinds of, you know, artificial structure you can buy. Again, I'm not trying to spend a bunch of money on this little cattle pond. So I went with the DIY route. And again, like if you want to go the absolute cheapest, easiest, you know, route possible, go cut you a couple cedar trees down and throw those suckers in there. It'll work great. Again, I was worried about getting hung up. And then also one kind of downside to that is eventually those trees will rot and decompose and deteriorate and you're going to lose your structure. And so because of that, I opted to go with the man-made route, which sounds counterintuitive. Like normally you're trying to go as natural as possible. Excuse me. But this is one time in one area where I actually feel like artificial is the way to go. So for me, I wanted to try a couple different things. So I ended up going with two different methods. And one ended up being a little bit cheaper than the other. But the other one I would say was maybe a little better. So the first thing I did was I scoured the internet for all kinds of DIY ideas and products and stuff. And I came across these things. I bought them on Amazon. They are Bill Dance Porcupine Fish Attractor Spheres. And so it's a little ball, smaller than a basketball, but it basically has a whole bunch of holes in it to where you can put PVC pipe pieces inside this ball. And so I got a 3-pack for $53, so not that bad. Went to Home Depot, bought a bunch of, I think it was half-inch PVC. It tells you what size and schedule and everything to buy. So basically for like $100, I had these three balls of like spikes. And what's kind of cool about it is you can adjust the depth by how long you make your PVC pieces. And so, you know, it's going to go on all sides. And so, you know, if you cut, let's say you cut 1 foot pieces, well, that's going to be 1 foot on each side. And the ball itself is probably 6 to 8 inches, something like that. So, you know, that's going to be 2.5 feet by the time you get all said and done. And so I did some 1 foot, I did some 2 foot. I don't think I did any longer than that, honestly, because like I said, by the time, you know, if you have 2 2-foot pieces in the middle part, you're going to be almost out of the water in 5 feet of water. And most of your structure, you're going to want kind of 5 feet and under, because that's where a lot of your fish are going to be, at least that you're going to be able to reach and actively fish. So yeah, I think I ordered 2 of those. Like I said, got the PVC pipe and everything. And again, those are 3-packs. And so you're supposed to kind of put those in like a little cluster, you know, a foot or two apart to where the fish can kind of swim in and out and go back and forth. I think I even got creative and like on one set of them, I did longer pieces and shorter pieces. So the longer pieces kind of picked it up and then the shorter pieces kind of acted as like tighter structure, you know, for bait fish and stuff. So just kind of, you know, just kind of had fun with it. So did a couple of those. And then the cheaper option was again at Home Depot. That's where most of this happened. Home Depot had like these mini buckets. So not a full 5 gallon bucket. These were like 1 or 2 gallons, probably like 10 inches by 10 inches, something like that. And man, I think they were like $1 a piece, something like that, maybe $2. And so I got like 10 of those. And then I bought a few wooden stakes, like the, you know, 2-inch by 2, or yeah, no, 1-inch by 1-inch wooden stakes. And then I bought a roll of like the poly pipe that they use for water lines. Again, super cheap. I want to say I got 50 feet for $30, something like that. And then I think I got 2 bags of concrete. And so set all the buckets out. and I used the wooden stakes, just kind of put in the centerpiece, almost more as a hand of a handle more than anything. So I put one stake in each bucket, and then cut a bunch of probably 2 foot to 3 foot long pieces, and those things just kind of naturally curl, which is kind of nice. So poured a little concrete in each bucket, stuck those things in there, took the hose, mixed the concrete up, started sticking things in, and just created these awesome little webs of just nastiness stuff. So like I said, I think I did 10 or maybe 12 of those, and kind of took the same strategy as I did with the porcupine things. Like I'd put two or three together, a foot or so apart so that they kind of interwound and everything like that. By the time I did like 10 of those buckets and a couple of those porcupine balls, like I was pretty dang covered as far as the pond. Like I said, spread it. I put my waders on and everything. I did that this spring. Put my waders on, walked them out there, and actually placed them. I didn't just chunk them out there to where they land randomly. I wanted to be very specific and make sure I got them together and in the right spot. One, two, three, four, five. I basically had like six different patches of structure between all those things. So it worked out really, really well. And my plan is to, once a year or something, do a little bit more. Because honestly, you can't have too much structure. But just kind of getting started, I didn't want to break the bank. So just started small, did a little bit. And I mean, I spent maybe $300 on all that stuff. And like I said, got a ton of structure out there in the pond. I've been fishing it for, since I put that stuff in. And all of it works fantastically. Like you can tell when you hit it with, you can feel it on your line, but it just comes right off. There's been a couple times where it hasn't like wrapped around the tubing or anything, but it kind of maybe gets a little bit stuck, but you can just kind of walk over the side, you get the right angle and it slides right off. Like the hook doesn't actually stick into it. So super, super nice. I'm really glad that I spent that little bit of money instead of just doing, the branches and all that stuff, because again, those would break down, and also I would have a lot more lures out there in the pond instead of in my tackle box. So definitely think that is well worth the money. All right, let's talk fish, because I know that's why we're here. That's why everybody's listening to this. So like I said, this pond that I'm talking about actually had too many fish in it. And when I first started kind of fishing it and working with it, I actually thought it had nothing but bass in it because that's all I ever caught. I just wanted to see what was in it. And so I took a couple poles, I stopped and got some minnows, I bought some worms, and I was just like throwing lines out everywhere, just trying to, again, figure out what was in there. I wasn't sure if there might be crappie in there. I was hoping there was perch. I knew there was bass, but I never caught anything but bass. And what's still kind of boggles my mind, I don't think I caught a single fish on a worm or a minnow. Like the two natural baits that you think would, be the best, didn't catch a single fish on it. Everything I've caught out of this pond has been on artificial lures. So that, again, like I just thought it was all bass, and they were all about the same size. And so that was kind of what I expected. Like I figured it was overpopulated and I figured the fish were stunted. And that's exactly what turned out to be. And I'd fished the pond a little bit last year, not consistently whatsoever, but just a couple times. So I kind of knew what was going on. So this spring when I kind of got serious about it and decided this was the pond I was going to manage, I started fishing and I started throwing bass out. Like if I caught a bass, I was throwing it out. I don't know how many I took out. It probably wasn't enough. If I caught a young, really healthy looking fish, I might save it. But honestly, the bigger fish that a lot of people would be tempted to save, those were actually the fish that I wanted to take out because they got bad genetics. They're probably stunted. They're probably an older fish and they just probably weren't going to be what I was hoping, what I want them to be. So I was throwing a lot of fish out. I should have kept track, but I didn't. But like I said, essentially if I caught a fish, I threw it out. And I was a little bit worried because I was like, man, like what if I take out too many fish? But the more research that I did, the more, more I looked into it, basically what I discovered is that is almost impossible. It's almost impossible to take out too many fish, especially in this situation where you have a stunted, overpopulated pond. So that kind of put me at ease and I wasn't so worried about it. And then, so I did most of this pre-spawn. Like, a lot of this was like February, March-ish. You know, they were kind of getting ready to spawn, but hadn't really spawned. So I started taking fish out. And then one morning, I don't know why, I think I had my daughter. It was like a Saturday morning. My wife was gone. And so I took my daughter and we were just kind of walking around. I was trying to fish, but that's very hard to do with a, you know, an under 2 year old. But it was early in the morning and the sun was just right. And I actually saw a bluegill on a bed. And so I was like, holy snap. Like, it, this is like months have gone by. And I did not know there were bluegill. I just thought I had a bunch of, cannibalistic bass. So anyway, so I was like pumped. I was like, holy cow. Like, there are at least some bluegill in there. And so I went and bought some like really small swim baits. And got a lightweight rod, started throwing those, and I actually caught a couple bluegill, which blew my mind. Caught a couple that were like big, I mean, like definitely, you know, frying pan size. But that like completely changed everything. I wouldn't say everything, but like in my mind, my plan was I was actually going to buy some bluegill to put in there because I just knew I needed that bait source for the bass. And so I had been planning all, like basically my plan was to catch a whole bunch of bass, throw them out, get that population down, and then I was going to buy some bluegill because they're not that expensive. I mean, if you don't have to buy them, you don't want to, but you can buy bluegill minnows pretty dang cheap. So that was my plan, but like I said, eventually I figured out that I actually had bluegill in there, and once I knew they were there and started trying to kind of fish for them and stuff, there's actually quite a few bluegill in there. And so I actually went and bought a cast net just cause I was curious. I had a cast net already. I went and got my cast net and took it out there and just threw it a couple times just kind of see. And I caught a decent amount of bluegill. And so that, it had me curious cause I was like, man, like I feel like this pond should be better than what it is. But I just kind of got to thinking, it's like, man, like this thing has never been managed. No bass have ever been taken out. And I think I accidentally hit it just perfectly. Like, all those bass I took out pre-spawn, I think that is kind of what led to me having a fairly successful bluegill population in there now. I think there was always bluegill in there, but I think what would happen was, you know, a few would survive, but basically every time they spawned, there were so many bass in there that they'd just get hammered right away. And then they'd eat themselves out of house and home. And there was a couple, like I said, there's a couple bigger bluegill in there that were maybe too big for the bass to eat. And so they would spawn. And again, you know, maybe a couple would survive, but most of them would get eaten. But I think what happened now is after I took out quite a few bass, there wasn't as much competition. And so some of those bluegill that have spawned, some of those fry are actually making it. And they're actually becoming bigger bluegill. And those are making more bluegill and feeding those bass. And so I wouldn't say it's, I mean, I know it's not perfect, but I do think that I've made a lot of progress in a short amount of time this spring just from taking bass out of the pond. And I know that sounds so counterproductive. If you're trying to make a fishing pond, you would think the more fish, the better. But you look up any research or YouTube or whatever you want to do, and they will tell you that one of the most important things for having a nice bass lake is taking bass out. They're too good. Like, they're too good at surviving. They don't really have any predators, especially in a pond like this. And they just live and they thrive and they breed and they eat themselves out of house and home. In a big old giant lake where you have shad and crawfish and just all kinds of random fish, you know, crappie and catfish and everything else, you know, in a huge couple thousand acre lake, there's just so much bait out there that it doesn't matter. And that's what helps those bass obviously grow to, you know, 10 plus pounds or whatever. And I don't think I'll ever grow, I should say that. I don't think you'll ever grow a 10 pound bass in an acre and a half lake or a pond. But I do think you can get up there. You know, I've fished some 2 acre and smaller ponds and caught 5 pound bass. And so that's my hope for this. Like, I won't even set my goal that high. If I catch a 3 pound bass out of this pond, I will consider that a raging, raging success. And, like, you know, I talked about not going dry. I talked about the structure and all that, But I honestly think if I could give you one tip, if you're fishing a pond that already has fish in it, you got to take bass out of it. That's like the number one key. And I know it sounds so backwards, but you got to take fish out of it. And I'm not talking 5 or 10. I'm talking a lot. And if you got a bigger pond, you know, if you're talking like 5 to 7 acre lake, I mean, I'm talking at least 100 fish a year, probably. There's a formula. I want to say it's like 20 pounds per acre. So like even in this little pond, especially where I got stunted fish that aren't even a pound, if I'm going to take out 20 pounds, you're talking maybe 30 fish at least. And that's to like maintain. If it's already overpopulated, you probably need to do more than that. I'm no expert. I've just been doing a lot of research and I've been having fun with my little experimental pond. I've spent, I'm going to say $500, maybe. That's on the structure stuff. I've bought some like chemicals to put in there to help combat some of the moss and everything that grows. Haven't bought any fish or anything like that. I bought some like little fish traps to just kind of see what was in there. I need to buy a turtle trap. That's another thing. I really need to get the turtles out of there. I got a ton of turtles. Less than $500, and I am like well on my way to having a really, really awesome little farm pond, fishing pond. So, like I said, I want to do this episode, just kind of a fun, random episode for the middle of summer where nothing else is going on. If you guys have any questions, feel free to reach out. If you're a younger person listening to this, you know, if you're high school age or something like that, this is an awesome little project for you to do. And you can make yourself a really, really cool, just memory-making type spot. Place for you and your buddies, maybe someday for you to take your kids. Just an awesome, awesome little project for you to do. So I know this was kind of a random, shorter, odd episode, but like I said, I've been thinking about this all spring and wanting to do an episode on it. I thought about like kind of filming my progress and what I was doing, but I don't know. Yeah, I go out there for like 5 to 10 minutes at a time, and then nothing happens for another couple weeks. So just didn't think it was worth videoing. But anyway, I will keep you guys posted on the pond. Like I said, if you have any questions, reach out to me. That's going to do it for this week. I'm going to go ahead and shut it down. Thank you guys for listening. I really, really appreciate it. Get out there and practice. I keep saying it. I say it every year. Deer season will be here before you know it. And you don't want it to sneak up on you. So thank you guys for listening. Love you guys. And until next week, I will see y'all right back here on the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.